This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. You know, for a lot of people, COVID-19 isn't real until they know someone who has it. Well, now someone we all know has it. Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha is a pediatrician based in Flint. She was one of the early voices sounding alarms on the city's water crisis, most especially its effect on children. Dr. Hannah Atisha is now on a break from her public health work. She's at home, tending to her own case of the new coronavirus. We reached her today via Skype.
It is great to be with you, April.
You tested positive for the coronavirus.
Yes, I got my results yesterday morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing much better. I'm absolutely on the mend. I think I probably had a more mild case. It started a couple of weeks ago with what I thought was a bad cold. I had fever, aches, and fatigue. I had a headache, a mild sore throat. It lasted a couple of days. I have underlying asthma, and I began to cough more, and it was like this deep old man dry cough that persisted. I used my inhaler. I took Tylenol, drank a lot of fluids, vitamin C. And then after a few days, I developed the most bizarre symptoms of loss of smell and loss of taste. And being really kind of obsessed with the news and the medical literature that's coming out about COVID, I knew that was one of the increasingly reported signs of having coronavirus. And that's what prompted me to get tested.
Yeah. I've been wanting to hear this from someone with medical training, just like what it's like. There have been so many comparisons, probably inept to the flu or the common cold. How would you say it stacks up to other regular conditions you've had?
Yeah, you know, I think it's more potent. It waxes and wanes. So, you know, I thought it was like better after a couple of days, but then I wasn't totally better. Then like the cough got worse, and then maybe I felt a little better, but then it got worse again. So I think it lingers longer. And then obviously, like I think I had a more mild case, and I'm hearing from so many of my colleagues, obviously the severe respiratory breathing issues that we're seeing, the rapid decompensation and needing to be on oxygen and ventilator support. But we're also hearing more about, you know, severe cases with gastrointestinal issues and neurological issues and more cases in children than I thought, you know, that was reported in other countries.
Were you seeing many patients in your practice who were sick?
I fortunately was not. I haven't been to clinic in probably 2.5 weeks before I had any symptoms. And I'm so grateful that I've been really home and isolated before I even had any of these symptoms. You know, this is the winter. This is when we have a lot of respiratory issues in children. See lots of kids with flu and colds, and coronavirus is the common cold. So it's actually something we've always seen, not this type of coronavirus, but we've always seen kids with respiratory issues this time of year.
This seems like a crazy question to ask an MD, but would you say you were able to take precautions with patients who were sick?
You know, I wasn't, you know, I don't have as much clinical time as I used to. My time is largely leading a lot of the public health response in Flint. So I'm not in clinic seeing patients as much as usual. But my colleagues who are not only in Flint, but really throughout the country, this, you know, network of incredible healthcare workers who have been at the forefront, what we are consistently hearing is that there's not enough precautions in place, especially with PPE, the personal protection equipment, that people are having to use the same mask for the whole shift or the whole week, that there's a rationing of you know, the PPE equipment. And that's not good enough. You know, we were really behind the eight ball in this crisis. Like, you know, obviously this, you know, this was an infectious disease. We couldn't have really prevented it. It's a, you know, it's a natural phenomenon, but we could have prevented this crisis where we are currently are in this nation because of lack of testing and lack of protection equipment, which is where we're at right now. Yeah. So that's what I'm hearing from my colleagues. I'm hearing a lot of folks who feel overwhelmed, who feel scared, who are no longer coming back to their homes because of fear of infecting their own families.
Do you have suspicions about how you might have contracted it?
Oh, that is a great question. And I think it's gone through my head. I have no idea. You know, I live in Metro Detroit, which is obviously a hotspot. My husband works in Detroit, so many cases in Detroit. Obviously, also, you know, seeing patients, but I don't think it was there. I was in New York City in early March, so the weekend of March 6th to 8th. And I think, but I'm not sure, but I think that's probably where I was exposed because my symptoms started about 10 days after that.
Do you have any worries that you might have passed it along?
Of course, I think everybody who has this overwhelming sense of guilt and anxiety that they may have shared it with others. You know, we were really early to kind of lock down our house. We've been living in our own family bubble. Nobody's come in, nobody's come out. We do grocery delivery. We don't talk to anybody, but that is a privilege that I have because of being able to take things like sick leave and work from home. And that is not a privilege that so many people have in this country, where they have to go to work even if they're not feeling well, and could potentially be exposing others because their life and their family's livelihood depends on it. So you know, I think I haven't left my house since I have had symptoms. So I'm reassured that I probably didn't infect, you know, more people.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha. She's a pediatrician who works in Flint and lives in Greater Detroit. And we're talking to her for many reasons, but also because she has tested positive for the coronavirus. We need to ask about your work community. Genesee County is reporting 349 cases, 10 deaths so far. That's official state results and, of course, may not reflect the true spread of the virus in Flint. What are you seeing among your colleagues and people that you know and patients that you do know about?
Yeah, so what we are hearing is a lot of folks who don't feel well, but obviously don't know for sure that they have coronavirus, but they suspect they do. The profound lack of testing in our country is making it really difficult for us to really identify the scope of this problem, not only in Genesee County, but our whole state, but really our whole nation. There's just not enough testing for everybody to get tested if they think they have this. So those numbers are a massive underestimation in Genesee County and throughout. What we are hearing or seeing in Genesee County is that, you know, we have not gotten hit as much as Metro Detroit has. But I think that's just a matter of time. As the virus continues to have community spread, our hospitals and our healthcare systems will be also at the state of capacity or near capacity that we are seeing in Metro Detroit. Something else that's concerning in Genesee County is very much like Detroit. We have overwhelming disparities, health disparities, chronic conditions like obesity and high blood pressure and diabetes that come with poverty, which are these pre-existing risk factors that can make this infection more severe and more deadly.
What are your concerns about patients and their families right now?
Oh, I have so many concerns. You know, like I said earlier, I'm really at this kind of state of privilege that I was able to stay home and rest and take precautions and be supported and be able to really kind of to fight this infection and recover. I worry that my families in Flint don't have those same resources, the same ability to be able to rest and be cared for and to be able to recover on top of so many of these kind of pre-existing disparities. I worry especially about the children and families in Flint, about the long-term consequences. So, you know, obviously Flint is in the midst of our water crisis. We've been working towards our recovery. Our water crisis has this potential for long-term health and neurodevelopmental consequences. And then we have this added public health crisis, which is creating gaps in education, gaps in nutrition services, gaps in the enrichment resources that our kids need to fully recover from our water crisis. So it's you know, that is what I increasingly worry about in Flint, is that, you know, the enrichment enrichments that so many other children have, who are, you know, doing remote learning and have Wi-Fi in their home and all these other things are not available for families in Flint.
I read this morning that some of the infrastructure replacements that were intended to address the water crisis have had to be put on hold. It's temporary, but the point is nobody knows how long. What do you know about the state of access to fresh water right now?
Oh, that is a great question. And this has been a concern both in Flint and in Detroit. So both communities have struggled with shutoffs. Flint's mayor, Neely, when he came into office last November, ended shutoffs. So there we have no new shutoffs in Flint for non-payment. However, we have legacy shutoffs, and nobody really knows the exact number. I heard at one point there may have been up to 5,000 homes with legacy shutoffs where people do not have access to water, are unable to wash their hands, which is so critical in fighting this pandemic. So my understanding is that the city they are trying to restart those homes with shutoffs. It's not like a simple flip of a switch. It takes time. It often takes plumbers to go into the home. There's often maybe damage or issues with getting folks reconnected.
Yeah, if it's anything like Detroit's plan, which involves a low cost $25 bill. I mean, you have to go through all the steps of reconnection, and you're still going to have to pay off that bill eventually. It's yes. Possible to imagine some customers might just decide, I'm going to try to ride it out.
Yes, I was so excited to hear about the governor's executive order that is committing, I think, $2 million to help with these restorations. So hopefully some of these fines and these fees will be alleviated, and we could really focus on the public health need to have access to safe, clean drinking water.
Mona, the state of Michigan was not tracking the demographics of COVID-19 cases until pretty recently, talking, you know, in terms of race and age and other aspects that might enlighten us as to who's getting sick. Was that a surprise to you that information wasn't being recorded?
I wasn't surprised, but I'm grateful that information is now being shared, although incomplete. There's a lot of folks that we don't know their race. And the information that has come out thus far really confirms what many people have been observing, where there's once again disparities in who's getting sick and most unfortunately who's dying from this. And it's predominantly an African-American population, disproportionate to the percentage of African-Americans in the state.
The statistic that we've seen that's most current is that 40% of the coronavirus deaths are of people who contract the disease are African-American people. What does this suggest to you about how the health system is responding in communities of color?
Yeah, I don't think it speaks as much to the healthcare system, but I think it speaks more to our public health system. So public health is how we keep people well, and healthcare is how we make sure that we can help people who are already sick. As a nation, we do a really good job, and we spend a lot of money on healthcare, but we don't do a great job in terms of public health and investing in the public health infrastructure to make sure that all people can stay healthy. And what does that mean? Those are things like poverty and addressing racism and historic racism and transportation access and nutrition services and, you know, child care and health care. These are all the building blocks of what makes communities healthy. And in places like Detroit or predominantly minority communities, we lack in all of those investments in what makes people fundamentally healthy. We have exceedingly high rates of poverty. We have lots of, you know, biases and legacy and current impacts of racism, lack of grocery stores, violence, all these underlying issues that lead to chronic diseases, that decrease immunity, that should make it no surprise that we now see these disparities.
You have spent so much time looking at kids who've been exposed to lead and trying to figure out what should be done to support them in their educations. I mean, is it possible for any therapist or any ICU or any emergency room or any ventilator to fully remediate what public health has failed to do on the front end?
No, and it doesn't make any economic sense. You know, nor does it make any common sense. As a nation, we always seem to function reactively rather than proactively. And that's what we're doing in Flint. We had this water crisis, and now we're spending all this money and resources to make sure that our kids don't see the consequences. But it's the same lesson here for this pandemic. If only we had invested in the public health systems, in the surveillance programs, in the technology, in the science, if we respected the science and the scientists, if we, you know, built out testing, if we kept a pandemic office, all of these things are preventative measures that could have prevented this crisis where we're at. And no amount of ventilators and no amount of ICU beds can really make up for what we failed to do in prevention and public health investment.
Can I just ask at home, what's it like in your corner of Detroit right now? I mean, the city is just awash in over 5,000 cases of coronavirus, including your own.
Yeah. So I'm sorry I had to add a number to that statistic to increase those rates. I don't know what it's like because I have not left my home. We are in absolute kind of home isolation quarantine. We play outside, but we don't leave kind of the boundaries of our house. That's fortunately kind of what I have been seeing around me. However, there's a lot of folks that are still not taking this seriously. A lot of folks who are going out and having play dates or meeting friends or socializing, or just going, you know, to the store for, you know, random things that aren't essential. So what I am seeing is reassuring. I think it's hard for so many people to stay home and to feel bored. But listen to the governor. We've got great kind of leadership at our state level. And I think the most important message is that, you know, staying home will absolutely save lives because that's one less person that could be potentially infected that could spread it to others.
You going to take care of yourself?
Absolutely. I am absolutely on the mend. I feel so much better. I really wish I get my sense of smell and taste back soon because I love eating. I am Arab American. We cook with garlic and onion and spices and herbs, and it has been so hard to just eat what tastes like paper every single day. But I'm also so excited that I can play a small part in helping others. When I got my test result back yesterday, I immediately signed up to a research project being run by Michigan State University to donate my plasma, which has COVID-fighting antibodies, to others who may be sicker. So since I kind of shared that result yesterday, more than 700 people have signed up to be part of that website where they can also, people who've also recovered and can now also donate their antibodies to others who aren't doing as well.
Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha is a pediatrician with a practice in Flint. She's also a public health advocate and the author of What the Eyes Don't See. She joined us by Skype from her home. Dr. Mona, you take care.
Thank you, April. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's our show for today. Today's edition of Stateside was directed and engineered by Laura Weber Davis. Producers include Mike Blank, April Van Buren, and Mercedes Mejia. Stateside is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm April Baer. Please do stay safe out there. Stay home, and thanks for listening.